Oh, ho, ho! Merry Christmas! It is Wednesday, December 25th, 2024. It is indeed Christmas night. Santa Solomonster has brought you the gift of the sound off. I hope you all got what you wanted under the tree this year. Hopefully none of you got any Adam Cole in your stocking. It's going to be a light night because a lot of people are probably hanging out doing stuff for Christmas, but I'm here because we had one episode left of AEW Dynamite before World's End coming up this Saturday, and the final league portion of the Continental Classic. We had a lot of Continental Classic matches tonight. If you are not a fan of the Continental Classic, this was not the episode for you. Because we had five matches in the tournament here. An episode of Dynamite that was taped, because they wanted to give people the night off, taped on Sunday from the Hammerstein Ballroom in New York City. And those folks in NYC were the real MVPs tonight because, and even going back, I think, to the Ring of Honor show on Friday night, and they had Collision on Saturday. Great crowd in New York City. Very loud, very energetic. It's what I love about that building. There's just a vibe and an energy to it. Not a fan of the paint job, but a lot of great wrestling shows have happened inside that building, and surprised it took this long for Tony Khan to venture over there, but hopefully they'll make it back again at some point next year. I'd love to see WWE go there. I'd love to see everybody run Hammerstein. Well, GCW is running Hammerstein next month, but great crowd that they had in New York City. We did indeed have, as I mentioned, five matches in the Continental Classic. And the finalists who are going to World's End in Orlando this Saturday are the current Continental Champion himself, Kazuchika Okada. He is on his way. Ricochet is on his way. Will Ospreay and Kyle Fletcher. All four men are going to the pay-per-view this weekend. There were some rules changes that were announced at the beginning of the tournament this year. It was a little confusing. I'm not sure exactly why the change was made, but it was stated at the very beginning that unlike last year, this year, the winner of the Gold League would face the runner-up in the Blue League, and the winner of the Blue League would face the runner-up in the Gold League. And I can only imagine it was because Tony Khan, when he mapped out this tournament, he had certain matches that he wanted to do in each league, and he had it all mapped out for where he wanted this to end up. And to accommodate that, there had to be some rules changes. That's the only thing I could think of, because I'm not sure why the changes that he made needed to be made, when the only change that should have been made was to have an AEW World Championship opportunity on the line at the end of this tournament. I still don't really see the point of having a Continental title. If there was any change that was going to be made, that was the one I was hoping for. That's the one I think they should still make next year. But what this sets up now for World's End is a match between Will Ospreay and Kyle Fletcher, a rematch from the previous match they had, which was excellent. And Kazuchika Okada will go one-on-one with Ricochet. The winner of those two matches will then meet in the finals to crown a new Continental Champion. So that is the way things are currently shaping up. And the action that we got tonight was largely very good. And that's going to be the bulk of what we talk about here, because there really wasn't a whole lot else to this show tonight. But in terms of wrestling, you got a very good wrestling show. You know, there wasn't a lot of storyline advancement here. The stories that they've been trying to tell for World's End have largely played out. We got a video package for the TBS title match. We got a video package for MJF and Adam Cole. Really isn't much else left to say or do. Cole and MJF were in the ring at the Hammerstein on Collision on Saturday. That was probably the best segment of the entire build-up to this match, and it's not enough to still get me to sit here and say, oh boy, now I'm really super invested in this story, I'm super invested in this match, because I'm not, and it sucks, because a year ago it would have been a very different story, but unfortunately we know what happened there. But that was the best that we've seen from those two, and it happened on Saturday. Tonight we got a video package. What I'm going to be doing a little bit later on at the end of the review, I will run down the card as it currently stands for World's End. There's eight matches so far. I would love it if it stayed that way. I think that's a perfectly fine number, but we know how these things go with some of these AEW pay-per-views, so there could still be matches added. I think eight, though, is a good place for them to stay. But that's what we're going to be talking about here. A very good professional wrestling show on Christmas night. Nothing more, nothing less. You can't really ask for anything more. You're in this sort of dead period right now. We have a pay-per-view on Saturday. And then next Wednesday is the first simulcasted edition of Dynamite. They're going to be airing live on TBS and also simulcasting live on Max, which for AEW is a big deal. This is something Tony Khan has been waiting for a very long time. And that officially kicks off next Wednesday, which kind of feels like a new era for AEW. This is the streaming era, the Max era. This is something that's been talked about all year. So that will be kicking off next week. And I think that's really when, if there's anything big planned, you know, outside of the pay-per-view this weekend, Tony may be saving that for next Wednesday. You know, he wasn't going to go too crazy on a taped show on Christmas night. But this is your AEW Dynamite on 34th Street review for Christmas night 2024. Thank you guys for hanging out with me tonight. Do hit that subscribe button and that like button if you are with me live. Super chats are open. I don't know how many of them we will actually be reading through tonight, although we did have some gifted memberships before. So I want to thank you guys for that. I don't have any. Oh, it was Base Beerus. Base Beerus, and I believe it might have been Slipper House, Extra Extra, with some gifted memberships. So thank you, guys. I appreciate that. You could always gift channel memberships. Christmas is not over yet. You could always gift memberships to people if you want to. You'll see the button in the live chat. But like I said, the Hammerstein Ballroom was hot for the show tonight. Taz was back. Taz has been gone for a while. They shot that angle where he was ambushed by somebody and we didn't know who. Come to find out it was Christian Cage. You know, Taz was back and there was really no mention or anything as far as that angle goes. But he came out and he was on commentary. You know, New York City, an appropriate place for him to make his return. He did legitimately have knee replacement surgery, so that's why he's been gone. And he joined Excalibur, who was losing his voice. And Tony Schiavone on commentary. Boy, well, he better get that voice primed and ready because he's got at least a 3.5-hour pay-per-view this weekend. So hopefully he'll, for his sake, he'll be okay by then. But they opened the show with the first of 5 Continental Classic matches. This from the Gold League. This one between Will Ospreay and Brody King. Hey, JP, welcome to the channel. Santa Solomonster welcomes you. Now, you might notice here, before we go on any further, you might be wondering, why do we see Bret Hart and his Winged Eagle belt here in the artwork tonight? Because it's Christmas. And because he has a Santa hat on his head. And because it makes me happy. If it were up to me, I would have Bret Hart in the artwork every single week. But I knew it was Christmas, and I said, how can I pass up the opportunity to have Bret Hart with a Santa hat in the artwork? It's just festive for the occasion. And there you see a little Danhausen as well. He's got a little Santa hat on his head, too. That's how we do it around here. Will Ospreay, surprisingly, not going to the Tokyo Dome for either of the big New Japan shows at the beginning of January. Brody King is. Brody King is going to be wrestling, I believe, David Finlay at Wrestle Dynasty on January 5th. I'm going to have a full preview, by the way, for both of those shows with my predictions on the podcast this weekend. So if you are planning on watching those shows and want to know my thoughts on Wrestle Kingdom and Wrestle Dynasty, you can tune into the show. Brody wanted a gonzo bomb early here, and Ospreay hit a hurricanrana to the outside. King went face first into the steps when Ospreay drop-kicked his leg out from under him. And Brody responded with a spinebuster onto the edge of the ring steps to take control. So he was dominant here. Ospreay, though, fired off a desperation handspring corkscrew kick that sent Brody back out of the ring. Sky Twister press followed from the post to the floor and then back inside. King no-sold the charging boot. We got a chop battle between these two. And that was a mistake for Will Ospreay. If you're Will Ospreay, honestly, if you're almost anybody, you don't want to get in a chop battle with somebody like Brody King. That just seems like a bad idea. And it was a bad idea for him here. Out to the floor again. King hit a violent crossbody block against the guardrail and then back inside. Hit a cannonball in the corner. Only got a 2 count out of it. So Brody went for a charge. Ospreay, though, cut him off with multiple hook kicks. He tried for an os cutter. King just kind of swatted him out of midair. He went for a big lariat. Ospreay somehow maneuvered his way around and connected on a Styles Clash for a near fall. That had the crowd going nuts. Hidden Blade was countered by a lariat and a sit-out pile driver by King for two. Ospreay did connect with the Hidden Blade, and King kicked out at one. So then another Hidden Blade connected, and this time Brody kicked out by two. And Ospreay finally got King up for the Stormbreaker, which honestly, in and of itself, was impressive. Got him up for the Stormbreaker, hit the move, and that, finally, was enough to secure the win for Will Ospreay. And a hard-fought win it was. This was a hell of a match here from these two to kick this show off. And another standout match from Will Ospreay in a long line of them. Not just all year, but just in this tournament alone. None better than the match with Darby Allin, though. That match was special. A lot of stupid shit from Darby in that match, but I would not put this above that one. One too many near falls, I think, for my liking. On Ospreay's finish. It was a gradual thing, though, where, you know, each time he hit the Hidden Blade, first he got a one, then he got a two, and then he had to dip into his bag, and he had to pull out a Stormbreaker to ultimately pick up the win. So that was sort of the story they told here in this match. He was outpowered. He was just outdone by this bigger man who was beating the piss out of him. And it wasn't so much that Ospreay won the match, he survived the match in the end. So they kind of built up to the Stormbreaker, and that nets him 3 points, tying him with Claudio and Ricochet, each with 9 points atop the Gold League. Renee was backstage with Christopher Daniels, and he had security with him. And I'm looking at them, and they're in one of the hallways, by the staircase at the Hammerstein, and I just kind of smiled because I've been in that building many times. And I've had to, you know, climb those stairs, as many people have, because they have like a tiny little piece of shit elevator there. So if you're up in the Grand Ballroom, you've got to go up 8 flights of stairs. This, you didn't have to if you went to this show, because they were in Hammerstein. Hammerstein is ground level when you walk in. But I recognize the carpet or whatever in the staircase, and I just thought, man, you know, those days of being in the Grand Ballroom, like TNA used to have shows up there, and everybody just sort of running up the stairs, and by the time you get to the top of the stairs, you look around and you just see a bunch of wrestling fans like huffing and puffing like they need oxygen. Fucking 8 flights. It's rough. It's a nice building, but it's not a nice building. But anyway, they're standing there, and Daniels has security, and he approaches the Hurt Syndicate, who has arrived, and he informs them that MVP and Bobby Lashley, they have been banned from the building tonight. And MVP said that as a courtesy to Renee, they're going to follow their request, and he wishes her a very Merry Christmas before he and Lashley take their leave. I'm not sure why this was needed, because Shelton Benjamin was in a Continental Classic match tonight. In the Continental Classic, there is nobody allowed at ringside. There's no outside interference, and there's no managers allowed at ringside. There's no one allowed. So if the concern was that they might get involved in Shelton's match, I'm not really sure why that was even a concern. This late in the tournament, you know, they weren't going to cost them any points. So it just kind of felt pointless to me. But we didn't see those two again for the remainder of the show. Stairs are faster than an elevator, yes. But it's just tough when there's 8 flights of them. It's one thing. I've been to, in the past, friends who used to live in the city who had like an apartment on like a fifth floor walk up, which, you know, for me was no big deal unless you were carrying furniture or something. 8 flights of stairs is a lot. I don't care what anybody says. It's a lot. There should be an easier way. And the one little elevator they have, it's just not enough. Thank you again for hanging out with me tonight. We'll still have some people filtering on in here as we go along. Again, I hope everybody celebrating had a very good Christmas and got what they wanted. Got all their gifts. We had another Gold League Continental Classic match. Ricochet, one-on-one with Darby Allin. First time ever match. which is one of the cool things about this tournament. It allows us to see matches that ordinarily we wouldn't see. And this was one of them. More toilet paper thrown at Ricochet. This was something I noticed on Collision when he came out for his match with Will Ospreay. And the crowd showered him. I say showered. I mean, it's not like streamers where he was covered in them, but they showered him with toilet paper, which is the old Jimmy Rave thing when he used to come out at the Ring of Honor shows. Very first show I ever went to in that area was right around the corner. It was not in the Manhattan Center. It was right around the corner in the New Yorker Hotel. And Jimmy Rave had toilet paper thrown at him when he came out to the ring. There was a giant chandelier in the ballroom. This is the final show they ever did. Not because of this, but this was the final show they were ever doing in the New Yorker Hotel ballroom before moving around the corner to the Manhattan Center. But that toilet paper got wrapped up in that chandelier. Pieces of the chandelier fell. I have a feeling that if it wasn't going to already be their last show there, it would have been their last show there regardless. No chandeliers here, though, so you didn't have to worry about that. I do have to say this, though. You know, with this new Ricochet kind of character overhaul, the timing for him has been very advantageous because the reactions that he has gotten on Collision and then again tonight, or Sunday night when this was taped, were perfect. The timing could not be any better because these crowds reacted to Ricochet and they reacted to him negatively, but that's the point. They're supposed to react to him negatively. But this was just the perfect place for them to be running at this point in time, because whether the toilet paper or just the crowd reaction in general, this is something that he needs. This is something that Ricochet needs. He needs to be able to feed off that negative crowd reaction. And it just reinforces, you know, what they're trying to do with him right now, which is get people to hate him. And I still feel I'm shocked based on some of the things I see on social media that there are still people who don't understand what Tony Khan is trying to do with Ricochet. When at this point, especially after this week, it should be pretty clear, right? He is the delusional heel who's completely cocky and arrogant and full of himself and thinks that his shit don't stink. It's very simple. I don't understand why some people are like, what are they doing with Ricochet? Or, you know, they're burying Ricochet. It's pretty obvious what they're doing with him, and it may yet work. And New York City was the perfect place for him to be playing this character here as he begins his new journey in AEW as a heel. So this was a much slower pace to start than you would think you might get from these two. Ricochet backed Darby into the corner. He teased the clean break until the referee stepped in between them, and then Ricochet got in a cheap shot, which took us into the commercial break. Ha, the bald chance, yes. You bald. Yes. He gets a lot of those chants, too.
It's the amazing Gunthar. Jerry Lawler loves Gunthar the Magnificent. All hail Gunthar.
Hey, Jeremy Rose with the Gunthar appearance on Christmas night. I figured Gunthar was going to be hanging out with his family tonight, but evidently he is going to be joining us here on the stream. It's always good to see him. Hey, Jeremy, thank you for the $50 super chat. I appreciate that very much. Says, Merry Christmas. Thanks for all you do. Not a huge AEW fan, but the show being in Hammerstein was a better look than their normal dark, empty arenas. I agree. Also looking forward to the eventual swerve beatdown of Ricochet. See? It's working. He's not even a big AEW fan to begin with, and he can't wait to see Swerve kick Ricochet's ass. That's the point. Ricochet acting the way that he's acting is supposed to get you to want to see him get his ass handed to him. So with Jeremy, at least, it's working. Somebody in the crowd threw toilet paper again at Ricochet during the match, and he chucked it back at them, but the little delay there allowed Darby to sweep the leg out on the apron. Both men took turns sending the other into the guardrail. Darby, though, missed the coffin splash against the railing. Dropkick sent Ricochet to the floor, and Darby wanted a suicide dive, right? That low dive that he does through the bottom and the middle rope. And as he came soaring out of the ring, Ricochet jumped up and caught him in the side of the head with a knee strike. So that took out Darby briefly. Ricochet sets up a table on the outside of the ring, and he places Darby on top of the table, and he goes back up to the top rope, and he comes diving off with a 630 senton through the table, which was a hellacious bump. I mean, no matter how many times he does that move, you know, any kind of table bump like that, you do a 630, and that's always going to be impressive. But both men were down. Doctors came over to check on Darby as they went into picture-in-picture. After a break, both men were fighting on the ropes. Darby managed an avalanche code red and then a proper one, but only got a near fall out of it. Darby wanted a coffin drop. Ricochet, though, rolled to the apron. Battled back. He tried for a springboard 450, but he missed. Darby locked in the Fujiwara armbar as Justin Roberts announced that there were 2 minutes left in the match. Yeah, because these matches have a 20-minute time limit. So Ricochet almost got the rope with his arm, but Darby wrapped the arm up, and Ricochet had no place to go, but he just got his toe on the bottom rope for a break. And with 1 minute remaining, the urgency from Darby, you could see it on his face. He floated over a locomotion, Northern Lights, into the Scorpion Death Drop. Ribs, though, were in a lot of pain. He was selling the ribs. Darby climbed the ropes at the 10-second call. He did hit the coffin drop, but time ran out before he could get the pin. After the match, Darby was left looking very dejected. Ricochet left the ring. He was cackling. He was doing his little hyena cackle outside the ring as he gloated back up the ramp. And Darby got cheered by the crowd as he was exiting. This is something I wasn't sure if this was going to mean anything or not, but this was very interesting because as Darby is leaving, Commander is entering. Commander and Alex Abrahantes, they're coming out because we're going right into the next Continental Classic match. I mean, it was boom, boom, boom with these matches. But Darby whispers something into his ear. He whispers something to Commander and to Alex that we obviously can't hear. And he heads to the back. Now, before we get into the next match, with that time limit draw, Ricochet picks up 1 point. Because you get 1 point for a draw. Actually, both men do. But what that does is it puts Ricochet at 10 points, which guarantees him a spot in the semifinals at World's End this weekend. And that means that Darby Allin is done. Darby is finished. Which is why he looks so sad. So Ricochet, look at that, Ricochet. Everybody who called him a geek, everybody who called him a loser. Right? He's cackling, he's smiling, he's moving on. He's going to the pay-per-view. He has a spot at World's End this weekend. Darby Allin does not. Swerve Strickland does not. Bobby Lashley does not. A lot of people are not on that pay-per-view, but Ricochet is. Now we got more tournament action here. With Commander, who just won the Ring of Honor television title on Friday night, final battle. Here he was taking on Claudio Castagnoli. Now, Commander came into this with a grand total of 0 points, just like the Beast Mortos. They didn't have a lot of luck here in this tournament. So all Commander could really do is just play spoiler. He's not winning shit, right? He's not going anywhere except home. That's about it. He's going back to Ring of Honor. So all he could do here is spoil the fun for Claudio. And that's exactly what happened. Tony Schiavone, though, did not do a very good job of maintaining his credibility. Because on commentary, Tony Schiavone told us that Commander is really surging lately. He said this despite Commander not having a single win in this tournament. He racked up a grand total of 0 points up until this point. One win at the Ring of Honor show on Friday night does not mean you're surging. That was a stupid thing for him to say. Claudio used his power to avoid all the flashy offense and all the springboard attempts from Commander. Then he hit a fireman's carried him up the ropes and then hit this massive gut, like the biggest gut buster I've ever seen off the top rope. It was not enough for a three count. He only got a near fall out of it. Claudio continued to keep Commander grounded until Commander tried to poison Rana. Claudio, though, held on and both men fell over the top. They landed in the same position. with Claudia dropping Commander face first on the apron. Back inside, Commander managed to springboard Hurricane Rana. That sent Claudio into the post. And then Commander scaled the ropes and hit a somersault dive as Claudio clutched his right arm. So there were signs of life here from Commander. Back inside, Claudio tried a pop-up uppercut, but Commander countered into an abdominal stretch. And Commander flipped up, hit a facebuster before going up the ropes, only to get crotched, and we got our first Yambag City reference from Taz. Been a while since we've heard about Yambag City. But that's where Commander paid a visit here tonight. And then a running boot sent Commander to the floor. Now, Claudio is arguing with the referee. And Commander is outside on the floor. And they shoot Commander, reaching under the ring. And he pulls out Darby Allin's furry pink jacket. And he's rummaging through this thing. And he reaches into one of the pockets. And he pulls out a pair of brass knuckles. And he places the brass knuckles on his hand. And so now it makes sense what Darby was telling him and Alex as they were passing by one another when Darby left after his match. He was telling Commander, hey, I left a little gift for you under the ring. So now Commander has the brass knucks, which Claudio does not see, and the referee does not see. Claudio comes over to the ropes to try to grab Commander. Referee's vision is shielded as Commander hauls back and he waffles Claudio right in the head with the brass knucks. It knocks him backwards. He's knocked out cold. And Commander follows with a top rope, shooting star press, and he pins Claudio Castagnoli to pick up the first 3 points of the Continental Classic for himself and eliminates Claudio from the Continental Classic. I really like that finish. Because even though it goes against everything this tournament is supposed to be about, right? This tournament is not supposed to be about cheating. It's not supposed to be about using weapons and interference or any of that stuff. It's supposed to be about honor. It's supposed to be about respect. And this flies in the face of that. But it's a very smart finish because it's a callback to Collision, where Claudio beat Darby using brass knucks. So this was Darby's way of getting revenge and saying, fuck you. And throwing it back in his face. And in the process, Commander gets a big win. He got a nice ovation for the win. Yeah, I mean, he was over at Final Battle when he won the TV title too, but this was more a case of people. This was the big, like, surprise win here, the big spoiler win in this tournament. So, of course, people were going to cheer for that. After the match, though, the Death Riders hit the ring. They put a beat down on Commander. There is a price to be paid. Marina Shafir went to go grab a chair until Jay White's music hit. And he comes out on stage and he's standing there and he's got them distracted. And what they don't see is Orange Cassidy enters from behind. And now he's in the ring. And he cleans house on Wheeler, Yuta, and Claudio. Jay White comes in. He plans pack with a Uranagi. Yuta stumbles back in and he gets dropped with a beach break until Cassidy went to go check on Commander. He left Jay White alone, and John Moxley ran in at that point with the briefcase that supposedly has the AEW World title inside, but it's comically too small to actually hold that belt, and he hits him from behind with the briefcase, and Cassidy as well. Takes the microphone, and Moxley says, as long as his heart is still beating, this is the closest that Cassidy and White will ever come to the AEW World title. He says they're delusional if they think that they deserve to even lay eyes on this title. Of course, they can't lay eyes on this title because we haven't seen the fucking title since he won it. It's been hidden away. Hangman Page's music hits. And he walks out, slowly makes his way down to the ring. Cassidy and White, they slowly get to their feet. And then Moxley realizes he is surrounded by all of the challengers in the four-way main event on Saturday. He's all by himself. All of the other members are outside the ring. They've all been taken out, except Marina Shafir, but they've all been taken out. Page ducked a briefcase shot. Moxley ate an orange punch. He ate a buckshot lariat, and then finally a blade runner, leaving the challenger standing tall. White went to go pick the briefcase up, and both Cassidy and Page, they each placed a foot on the briefcase, preventing him from picking it up, and we got a three-way standoff here between the challengers to close out the segment. So for a change, it was nice to see the three challengers not look like a bunch of goofballs where they just, you know, allow their hatred for each other to make themselves look completely inept. They actually stood up to the champion and they sent Moxley packing. So they looked halfway competent for a change, which was nice. But again, very basic, you know, I mean, nothing really out of the box as far as any kind of final push for that main event on Saturday. I'm not sold on the Death Rider stuff. I'm still not. I'm just not into this angle. I'm just not. I think it sucks. The match on Saturday, though, is going to be very good. You put those four guys in the ring together, you know, the talent that you have in there in a main event spot. You know, the best four-way that I've ever seen in this company was the Double or Nothing one from last year that we had with MJF and Sammy and Darby and Jungle Boy. I don't know that this will be on that level. I hope so. You know, again, they have the talent for it. But I'm still expecting it to be a very good match. I'm just not into this whole Death Rider storyline. And unless they have some kind of massive swerve that I just don't see coming, I'm not sure that that's going to change, but this seems like a long-term angle, so it's not the sort of thing that I expect to wrap up, you know, this weekend, or next month, or even in February. So, we'll see how the match turns out. Excalibur alerted us at this point in the show that Ricochet has won the Gold League in the Continental Classic, with Will Ospreay coming in runner-up. So he came in second place. And because he holds the tiebreaker over Claudio, that means that Ricochet faces the runner-up of the Blue League at World's End, and Will Ospreay faces the winner of the Gold League. Or Blue League. Whatever league he's not in. So anyway, Ricochet wins the Gold League. That was the breaking news here. We had a Continental Classic Blue League match with the current Continental Champion Kazuchika Okada taking on Shelton Benjamin. Now, these two were part of some tag team matches many years ago, over a decade ago in New Japan, but this is the first time that we're seeing them in a singles match. So when I was looking at what matches that we were getting tonight, the two matches that really stood out to me were Darby and Ricochet, which was good. It was not Ospreay and Darby, but it was good. And this one. I was looking forward to this match. So both men avoided each other's finishers early. Okada took a powder outside. Benjamin got suckered in by him when he went out after him. He ended up being DDT'd. Okada scaled the ropes back inside, but Benjamin sprung up and he leapt the ropes. Huge superplex followed for a two count only. Benjamin teased a tombstone. Okada slid out. He teased the German suplex, but Benjamin escaped into an ankle lock. Okada rolled out into the money clip, but as Benjamin escaped, Okada hit the air raid crash on the knee, and then he connected with the top rope elbow drop before doing the Rainmaker pose into the flip-off. Flipped off the crowd, flipped off Shelton as well. Okada wanted the Rainmaker. Benjamin ducked and hit three German suplexes of his own. The step-up corner knee connected. Okada countered with the exploder into a roll-up. Benjamin countered the Rainmaker into pay dirt for two, and Okada then spun out of a T-bone attempt as Benjamin was going in for the kill, and he managed to finally hit the Rainmaker. It only took one. One Rainmaker clothesline. One of the few finishes that is actually protected in this company. I can't sit here and say that nobody's ever kicked out of the Rainmaker in AEW before. I don't think that's true, but it is one of the more protected finishes in a company where I feel like very few are. You know, they're constant. And we saw it in the Ospreay match here on this show with the Hidden Blade, you know, kicking out at one, kicking out at two. I mean, on and on and on. This is, you know, it's become epidemic almost. But all it takes is one Rainmaker here to put the match into the finish column, and Okada picks up 3 points. After the match is over, Benjamin offered a handshake, and Okada, he made like he was going to flip him off, but instead he accepted the handshake. A nice little show of respect there from the Continental Champion. Or so I thought, because as Benjamin then turned to go walk away, Okada took his middle finger and he began wiping away, acting like he was wiping some sweat away from his cheek and his brow with his middle finger. So basically he flipped Benjamin off behind his back. What a spectacular asshole this man is. Good match, and that win sends Okada to World's End and to the semifinals. Okada advancing to the pay-per-view was a no-brainer. He's the champion, and he's been largely protected here in his time in this company. Not that he went undefeated in all of his tournament matches, but you knew that Okada was, if not winning the entire thing, certainly he was going to be in the semis at World's End. So that wasn't a surprise. Shelton Benjamin's story in terms of the C2 comes to an end here, but what a showing he has had so far. And not only just in this tournament, you know, he looked great in the tournament, but in the last 2 months that he's been on TV wrestling matches, right? Because he had his first match in October. And ever since then, he has looked fantastic. And it has been a real pleasant surprise. It's been refreshing to see Benjamin's run play out so far. Bobby Lashley is still kind of the gem of MVP's group. He's the one who I think will go farther than Shelton, ultimately. But that doesn't mean that Shelton can't go places. It doesn't mean that Shelton can't eventually have a run as, you know, TNT champion or something. I hope it happens for him in 2025. I hope that they can kind of keep the momentum going with him just going out there and having, you know, solid matches on TV and picking up more wins than losses, which unfortunately for a good chunk of his career over the last decade plus and whatever time he spent in WWE, it certainly felt like that was the case, where it was more losses than wins and he wasn't really the focal point. But it's been nice, you know, to see him go on this run and kind of get that kind of respect that he wasn't necessarily getting before. I like that. Renee was backstage with Swerve Strickland and Prince Nana and asks, what the end of 2024 as we head into the new year, what does it have in store for them? Strickland said he could hear the crowd chanting Swerve's house. He mentioned the success that he's had over the past year. He was about to mention his plans for 2025 when a cocky Ricochet came sauntering on in, strolled on in, and he asked him if he saw him go out there earlier and kick Darby Allin's ass. He said he's going to do something that Strickland couldn't do last year, and that's win the Continental Classic. Swerve said, look, he's not rooting against Ricochet. To root against Ricochet would be to root against AEW. And one thing he does not want to do, he will never do, is root against AEW and root against them succeeding. But don't blow it, he says, because if you do, I will embarrass you. And then he laughs in his face and he walks away. And then Ricochet says, that's why Swerve doesn't have his house anymore. That's why you don't have your house no more. And there was this very abrupt cut to commercial. I don't know what that was all about, but that was a funny line there at the end. And again, you watch this segment. If you don't see what they're doing with Ricochet, you're blind. It's clear as day. Is it going to work for him? I don't know. You know, that depends on what your definition of work is. Like, you know, how far can he go with this gimmick? We'll see. You know, I could see him being TNT champion. I could see him being one of those people under consideration to potentially take the title from Daniel Garcia at some point in early 2025. There are a few people on that list, including a certain someone who beat the TNT champion tonight, which we'll get to in a moment. But look, the thing, again, the knock on Ricochet, one of the main knocks on Ricochet has been he can't talk. I mean, he can speak, he can string words together, but he doesn't have the kind of promo ability or the verbal skills that sort of the elite of all elite wrestling have, or even in WWE. It wasn't his strong suit relative to what he could do in the ring. When you think Ricochet, you don't think, man, Ricochet, what a great promo. You think Ricochet, man, this guy goes out there and he dazzles and he does these moves that, you know, I've never seen done before. And he was an innovator in that way. And people copied him. And he was very influential in that regard, right? That's what you think of when you think of Ricochet. So this is not the first thing people go to, but this is the kind of character that could at least afford him the opportunity to try to hone those skills and get better. And this is the perfect gimmick for him, honestly. Like, it just works, right? He just strolls around thinking he's the best. He's number one. Nobody can touch him. Nobody could hold a candle to him. And people just look at him like, man, this guy is not all there, right? He's completely full of himself and completely delusional. And it makes him very easy to hate. You were already hearing some boos from the crowds. So why not lean into it? This could be exactly what he was missing. That other dimension, other than, okay, he's a great wrestler. That other dimension that wasn't there before. You know, I don't fault them for trying something here. Of course, when they first started doing this a couple of weeks ago, yeah, he looked like a fucking geek. Like last week when he got, you know, grabbed by Bobby Lashley and MVP ripped up the business card and then he just sort of ran away and it's like, all right, but this is where they were heading with this. And I do think it could work. And I do think that, you know, verbally he could improve. I don't think he'll ever be at that elite level. But the only way you could try to get better is to put a microphone in front of the guy or put a microphone in his hand and let him go out there and just keep talking. And the more he leans into this character and the douchier he gets and the more hateable he becomes, you know, he may end up being a better heel for it. But again, if there's anybody who doesn't understand what they're trying to do here at this point, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what show you're watching, but it's pretty clear to me. We got another one of these Chris Jericho New York Minute segments, and they filmed this one outside on the street with him. He was flanked by Big Bill and Brian Keith. And he was outside on, he said, 34th Street in the heart of Astoria. I must need a geography lesson if that's Astoria, and I live here. He said he feels the Christmas spirit. He's going to grant one final Christmas miracle this Friday on Rampage for Anthony Bowens, who wanted a match with him. Says that doesn't seem like he has too many friends lately, and he hopes that he doesn't bite off more than he can chew in the Grand Apple. Good Lord. Toni Storm, still acting like she's brand new to this company, coming out there for a match against Taya Valkyrie, who had Deonna Purrazzo in her corner. Toni offered a handshake at the beginning of this. Valkyrie, though, delivered a cheap shot, took control. We got chance of she's a rookie from the crowd. And Valkyrie hit her own version of Sweet Cheek Music, followed by a Meteora. Storm fired out of the corner, and Deonna tripped her up, allowing Valkyrie to post the leg, and she stayed in control during picture-in-picture. Toni got the ropes during a submission attempt by Taya, but Deonna slapped her hand away, and Storm came back with a Fez press before hitting the Sweet Cheek Music herself. Valkyrie spun out of a Storm Zero attempt as both women traded slaps until a spear dropped Toni. Valkyrie was berating her, and Toni managed a quick inside cradle for the surprise pin to pick up the win. Not much to this, and I am very much enjoying this character twist for Toni Storm and what she's been doing. I think it's fantastic. But this right here, this was just as basic can be. And neither one of these women at this point, as I sit here, are scheduled for World's End. I mean, Taya Valkyrie will definitely not be on the show. But Toni Storm is not scheduled to be wrestling on Saturday either. But they're trying to get her as much television exposure as they can because she's supposed to be brand new. She thinks she's new. She thinks she's just been called up to the big time. And we all know that timeless Toni Storm is going to return at some point. Right now, we're in this period where Toni is racking up wins. I don't know what's going to be the trigger point for her to eventually either become timeless if she really does have amnesia. I don't think that's the case. I just think in the end, we'll come to find out that this is her greatest performance yet as Timeless Toni Storm. But I just don't know what that trigger point is going to be when we get the reveal that she's been timeless this entire time and she's back. I suspect that won't happen until we get closer to February, because we're going to get her and Mariah May for the women's world title in Australia. That's not until the middle of February. So we still have some time before we get there. But in the meantime, it's like when they had her in her first match back on Rampage all those weeks ago, and people were bitching and moaning about that. Even days later, when it became clear where this was going, people were still complaining about it. And it's like, it doesn't matter, right? We have yet to get the return of the real Toni Storm. All this is right now, it's building up this part of the character even more, where she seems completely delusional, and she thinks that she's brand new to the roster. She's got to go around and shake everybody's hand. She's marking out for people in the back. I mentioned the other week that segment with Mark Briscoe on Collision last week, where she's doing an interview and she looks over and there's Mark Briscoe off in the distance, and the camera pans over and you see Mark all the way in the distance, and he's just standing there and he looks incredulous, like he can't believe, like, what? She's like, "Hey, Mark Briscoe, I'm Toni Storm." And he's like, "What the fuck?" Like, it's just little things like that. Or the vlog that they posted on their social media that they shot from Hammerstein. If you didn't see that, you got to go watch it. It's only a few minutes long, but it follows Toni around, and she's going around and introducing herself to different people. And then, like, at the end, she's like, I'm going to dress in the hallway here. I don't want to dress in the locker room with everybody else. And, you know, I don't want people to see me, though. She's like hiding behind a wall. Like, the woman is brilliant. She's brilliant. I'm sure she's very hands-on with all this. And this is the kind of character work that I love to see. I would love to see more of on this show. We don't get enough of this sort of thing. So I think she's been fantastic. But again, as far as this match is concerned, it was a win for her, but not much else to say about it because there really wasn't much to it. They aired a video package for the MJF Adam Cole match coming up at World's End. And, you know, the segment I mentioned on Collision on Saturday, where they actually got in the ring live, face to face, at Hammerstein, too, which is a great place to do this. And they had a back and forth. MJF had this great line in the promo about hearing that Cole lost his dentist. That was a brutal line. Yeah, he keeps coming back at MJF about the losing your hair and the fake hair and all that. You're only in your 20s. But the dentist line, I thought that was biting. That was a biting line there in that promo. But in the promo, MJF revealed, accidentally, he caught himself, but he revealed that he was planning on turning against Adam Cole last year at World's End before Cole turned on him. It's just that Cole beat him to the punch. But he also was thinking about doing or planning on doing the exact same thing. And, you know, it's nice revisionist history where they're trying to go back and they're trying to sort of amend the storyline and fix things up a little bit. It's nice of them to try to do that, but there's no saving this. You know, this angle jumped the shark a long time ago. And my sincere hope is that this match between them, this will be their second match. Their first one, they headlined Wembley last year. This will be it. Whatever comes out of this, wherever it may lead Adam Cole, that's fine. But this needs to be the end. MJF, which is not to say that Adam Cole is not a big star for them, but MJF is one of their biggest names. And he's missed a lot of time recently. He's been filming some movie stuff, and I saw the little teaser trailer that they put out today for the new Happy Gilmore movie, which I didn't realize was, I guess, airing on Netflix. Or at least they had Netflix branding all over it. So I don't know if it's getting a theatrical release. So I know he's been busy. He's been out, kind of out of commission there for a while. But they got to get him back into, you know, no pun intended, full gear. Because him and Will Ospreay and Swerve Strickland, Kenny Omega's on his way back. These are the big names this company needs to build around. And what they have had MJF doing is such a fucking afterthought on this show that it's just a waste of what he brings to the table. And it's just because this story does not have the same juice that it did a year ago. You know, it was derailed because of injuries. It sucks, but it happened. And so much time has gone by now, you can't get that magic back. Whatever magic these two had together a year ago, it's gone. It's been gone for a while. And there's no getting it back. So World's End needs to be the end of this story between these two. And they need to part ways, and they need to go, you know, MJF goes this way, Adam Cole goes that way. And we get MJF involved in something a little bit bigger than this, with whoever that may be. Because he's already worked with Ospreay. You know, they had two matches. That great match at All In. We never did get the match with Swerve and MJF. Because there was a segment that was, you know the segment I'm sure that I'm talking about, that was floating around on social media a few weeks ago. It was the backstage segment from late last year where MJF was kind of singing or humming Swerve's song. And they had this promo segment in the back that was fantastic. And it was building to a match that we never got. I would love to see that. That would be great for Swerve too, you know, to keep him in the mix with somebody at the top of the card. Why not do something with Swerve and MJF in early 2025, right? That's just one idea. But for the love of God, we got to put the stake through the heart of this story after Saturday, and we got to move on from here. Renee was in the back with Hangman Adam Page, and she wanted to know if all the challengers in Saturday's four-way main event are all working together, if they're on the same page. Hangman said he's going to make Moxley pay at World's End, which didn't really answer the question. Christopher Daniels shows up. I was a little perplexed by this segment. Christopher Daniels shows up and he says that Hangman is right. And he's not sure if he would have reacted much differently than Hangman has did to all of the things that have happened to him this year, all the adversity he's had to overcome. It's obviously driven this man to the brink of insanity. You know what? I'm not sure I would have reacted all that differently than you did. And Daniel says that everybody else has backup going into this championship match on Saturday, right? Orange Cassidy has friends. He's got best friends. And Jay White has the Bang Bang Gang. He doesn't have Juice Robinson because Juice Robinson is hurt again. He's out. But everybody's got backup except, of course, Moxley does, except for Hangman. Hangman doesn't have any friends left. He's alienated all of his friends. He's got nobody. Daniel says that if Hangman needs a friend, he'll be there for him. And he walks off, and then Hangman just mumbles something about, it's Christmas, leave me alone, and he walks away. How is Christopher Daniels allowed to so blatantly admit partiality to one of the challengers in your championship main event on the pay-per-view this weekend, given that he would have to be considered management? How is this right? Right? He's Tony Khan. He's Tony Khan's. He's Tony Khan's right hand man. How is he allowed to go out and say, I'll be your friend? You need backup? I'll be there to help you out in this championship match on Saturday night. Like, how is this fair? I know CM Punk is probably sitting at home, like in Chicago, and he's probably sitting there rolling his eyes, right? As if he's watching this show, but I could picture CM Punk in Chicago sitting there just rolling his eyes, I know, but management is supposed to be impartial. Management is not supposed to be picking sides. Christopher Daniels needs to stay in his lane, or he needs to resign from whatever, I don't even know what his official title is, but he needs to resign from his post if he wants to be a manager for Hangman Page. And in the final Continental Classic match in the league stage, this from the Blue League, we had Kyle Fletcher going one-on-one with the TNT champion Daniel Garcia. Get my palm. There we go. Look how cute I am. Look at this. Look at that. I gotta wear this hat more often. Tony Khan. Kyle Fletcher and Daniel Garcia. This was win or go home. for the TNT champion. A draw would do him no good. Kyle Fletcher came into this on top with 9 points. Garcia had 7. So Garcia would need 3 points to put him at 10. That's it. Pinfall or submission. That's all he needs. There was an early powerbomb on the outside. Kyle Fletcher got him up in a powerbomb position. And he powerbombed this man on the edge of the ring apron. And when I tell you, this looked disgusting. He took a disgusting bump onto the edge of the ring. After a commercial break, the crowd got Garcia back into it as Fletcher hit a big boot. Garcia, though, no-sold it. Turned Fletcher inside out with a lariat. And Kyle spilled outside where Garcia hit a drop kick up against the railing. Fletcher tried a draping DDT back inside, but Garcia escaped and hit a draping spinning neck breaker for 2. Fletcher battled back with a haluva kick in the corner, but as he went for a brainbuster, Garcia countered into a guillotine. Yes, I did see CM Punk was at one of the football games today. CM Punk, I don't know which game it was, I don't remember, but Punk was at one. He was all dressed up in a suit, corporate Punk. And then Liv Morgan was at another NFL game today. So there was plenty of promotion for Raw coming to Netflix. And from what I saw, there were no issues. I mean, you could chime in if you had issues, but there were no issues with Netflix as far as buffering or streaming or anything with the NFL game. So. And the NFL games are going to have a much bigger audience than what Monday Night Raw would have. So I think they should be good to go as far as Raw is concerned. Oh, it was Kansas City against Pittsburgh. Okay, I guess Punk was at that game. Steelers and Chiefs. Liv and Raquel were at the Ravens and the Texans. I don't really give a shit what game it was, but thank you for clarifying. I couldn't care less. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. The holidays are upon us. I like the lights and the decorations, even the music. I don't hate the music. Unless I hear All I Want for Christmas by Mariah Carey, then I immediately turn the channel or I flee the store because I just can't handle it. It's everywhere, every year. You know what I find relaxing? One of the free streaming services I watch has a crackling fireplace channel. Seriously, I put that on in the background while I work and it puts me in my happy place. For some of you, it might be a movie night with the family and a mug of hot chocolate. Whatever it may be, therapy is a great way to bring yourself some comfort that never goes away, even when the season changes. Therapy is something that can drastically improve your life in many different ways, whether it's discovering something about yourself that maybe you didn't know about before, or how to cope with some kind of stress in your life that's really dragging you down, or how to set boundaries in your life. Therapy can teach you new ways to cope with the things that may be holding you back from being your best self. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be flexible and suited to your schedule. That's what makes it so convenient. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. And you can switch therapists at any time for any reason at no additional charge. Find comfort this December with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Solomonster today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Solomonster. So Garcia kept the submission. He had the guillotine. Kept the submission while tied up in the ropes as Fletcher stepped to the apron where he escaped the choke into a brainbuster on the edge of the ring. And the way that Daniel Garcia's neck bent on this apron brainbuster. You know, I mentioned before the powerbomb on the ring apron looked disgusting. This was even worse. This was even worse than that. Inside, Fletcher hit a massive liger bomb for a close near fall, and then he went for the charging knee. Garcia swept the legs into a dragon tamer attempt. Fletcher nearly sent Garcia into Aubrey Edwards, and that brief distraction allowed Kyle to hit Garcia low. Kicked him right in the balls, and then he hit a brainbuster, but Daniel Garcia kicked out. Fletcher took Garcia up in the corner. He wanted another brainbuster, but Garcia tried turning it into a sleeper until both men just fell. They fell to the mat. Garcia got the dragon tamer, and he wrenched back on the legs. Fletcher, though, reached back like Brock. Remember Brock in the match with AJ at Survivor Series, when AJ got him in the calf crusher, how's he going to get out of this? All he did was reach back, he grabbed the fucking guy by the head, and he starts smashing him repeatedly into the mat. And that's what Kyle Fletcher did here to Daniel Garcia. Power drive knee connects, but as he went for a pile driver, Garcia got a jackknife cover for two. Fletcher eventually got to the top rope, and he hit the top rope brain buster, and he spiked Garcia on top of his head. And then inside, he got the pin to put him away. After the match was over, Will Ospreay's music hits. Ospreay comes down to the ring, and we get an intense stare down in the middle of the ring between Ospreay and Fletcher, the two former best friends. There were some sickening neck bumps in this match from Daniel Garcia in what was a very good main event, and it was a very good conclusion to the league portion of this tournament. Kyle Fletcher has looked great over these last several weeks. He caps it off with a win. Importantly, a win over the TNT champion, which is something that I think is going to have to come into play. It should come into play coming out of World's End, especially should he not walk out with the Continental title. Then he has put himself right in contention, one would think, for the TNT championship. There were some great matches up and down the tournament, you know, as there were last year. It's one of the things that I was looking forward to about this year. You know, you're going to get great matches. They can try to thread some stories throughout the tournament as well. There was no one great story that they told. I mean, kind of on an individual basis, they tried to tell certain stories during the matches. There were some underdog performances and stuff like that. But very light on story on the whole. It was just an opportunity for them to take somebody like Kyle Fletcher, who they are trying to push and trying to turn into something. And he went in there and he just had kick-ass matches, you know, at every turn. And he racked up almost as many wins or more wins than almost anybody else. So he needed a strong performance in this tournament. I think, you know, you want to give him a really strong performance, he should win the fucking tournament. But he has looked really good throughout this entire thing. And I think for him, it's been a big benefit. I still think that Ospreay and Darby is my favorite match of the entire tournament. But it was, you know, the thing about the Continental Classic, it also is an opportunity to give us some matches that we wouldn't ordinarily see, like Ospreay and Darby, Okada and the Beast Mortos. Okay. It's just one of those matches where it's like, when are we ever going to see a match like that? Okay. So you have the opportunity to see some unique matches that normally would not be booked. That's what the Continental Classic is. And people are either really going to like all of the wrestling that you get and the sports-like presentation of it and the standings, and they're going to follow along the round robin. If you're a fan of the G1 Climax, you might be into this tournament. If you're not into this shit, then it's rough because this plays out over a month and it takes you out of it. It's like the build-up to Forbidden Door. There are just some people who will check out of AEW for that whole period of time because they don't care about the interpromotional matches with New Japan and AEW or CMLL and AEW. And that's what the buildup largely is for Forbidden Door. So I feel like Continental Classic, same thing. You're either into it or you're not. But we got some great wrestling. You know, if nothing else, we got some great wrestling out of it. Now, we weren't done yet. The show was not over. We got one final pre-taped segment from the AEW World Champion. Jon Moxley is out back somewhere in the building with Marina Shafir. And he said it's three for the price of one. Even if it isn't always pretty, which is what he has accepted. They will continue their work after World's End and continue their crusade against ego and delusion. Paige, White, and Cassidy, they lack spirit and heart. No one in AEW wants it. They say they do, but they don't. Extraordinary things require extraordinary sacrifice, he says. If they aren't willing to sacrifice and take time to look up from their phone while the tanks are rolling in, then he'll sacrifice them. They think the AEW World title is something they can achieve when, in fact, it's something that you are. It's in your heart. Taking pictures with the belt by the pool and his car is not for Moxley, but he knows exactly who he is. He is the king. Born for all the things that come with it, says he is the only king that has ever been. Whatever. He's really, when he talks himself up, he's talking himself up like he's some kind of godly being. I'm not buying what he's selling. I can buy into the fact that somebody like Moxley would be sick of this new generation and social media and all these guys coming in who, you know, think that they're going to be the number one guy and they're full of ego and bravado and he's going to knock them down a few pegs, like the old vet, the old crusty veteran. Like, I can see that. That's basically, in a very simplistic way, you know, who he is. But again, you think back to the beginning of this storyline and the way that he was talking about, like, when he came out to confront Darby. Remember when this thing first started? And Moxley said, I just want to talk to Darby. Darby, where are you? I just want to talk to you. And they had that first confrontation in the ring. And it was almost like there's something going on here. And I can't tell you what it is. I can't explain it to you right now. But you better get out of the way because you're going to get rolled over. Like something big's happening, right? And I just can't shake this feeling that maybe there was some kind of a plan to do something with Shane McMahon and it fell through. Like, it just seemed like they were building to something that now they're not. There was this great sense of urgency. Something was happening that we were not yet aware of, and they've gotten away from a lot of that rhetoric. Now they just sort of talk about it in the abstract, like this is a movement of some kind, and you know, you better, you know, you're either with us or against us, and that sort of thing. But like the rhetoric doesn't have the sense of urgency that it had at the beginning. And it's almost like they changed something. They pivoted away in a different direction. I don't know what the grand plan is for this group. I don't know if it's just to continue to feed wins to Moxley and then one day he'll put Darby over. Yeah, maybe that's the plan. But what they're doing is just not very interesting to me. And I'm hoping there is some kind of big twist or turn. Not saying Shane, but there's some kind of big development here that, you know, I'm not seeing that can really shake things up here a little bit more with this, because this story just isn't working. It's not working. It's obviously not drawing in any new viewers, but it doesn't grab you, you know, and this is the main angle here. You know, that's the issue that I have with the Death Rider story. It's just not interesting. But as far as the Continental Classic is concerned, here's how the standings have turned out here. We have the Gold League standings. Ricochet wins with 10 points. We have Will Ospreay and Claudio tied with 9 points. Darby with 7, Brody King with 6, and Commander got his 3 points tonight. So Commander at least has some points. Blue League standings. Kyle Fletcher has 12. Kazuchika Okada has 10, Mark Briscoe 9, Daniel Garcia 7, Shelton Benjamin 6, and the poor beast, the Beast Mortos, 0 points. He's going to be very upset. He's going to grunt the next time we see him. He's going to grunt his way through his next promo. You know, he's going to be very angry that he got no points here in the Continental Classic. I just love these reports that we had. I think it was Meltzer and the Observer, where it's like, it's going to be a priority for Tony Khan to feature more luchadors on TV. They got this great television deal with Fox Sports in Mexico. And, you know, Hologram was getting a push. And he had that 2 out of 3 falls match with Mortos. And then Hologram got hurt. We haven't seen Hologram since then. But they got Commander and they got the Beast Mortos, right? Very important to them that they feature them and they kind of, you know, push them on TV. And we have this tournament here. And look, Commander was a replacement for Juice Robinson, and Juice wasn't going to win more than 3 points himself. The role that Commander had was to go in there and be the one to largely just do jobs. But you got Commander, and you got the Beast Mortos, who lost in a fucking 4-way at Full Gear that involved Buddy Matthews, who did not get involved, who did not get included in this tournament, but the Beast Mortos did. And why? Because his only job was to go in there and be a fucking loser. 0 points in this tournament. We got to push the luchadors, though. Yeah, hell of a push. 0 points for Mortos. Now, this is a somber occasion. Because before we get to World's End, there's one more AEW show. For those who are unaware, this is the final episode. Likely ever. I know Tony Khan at the taping said for the foreseeable future, but this is probably the end of Rampage forever. The final AEW Rampage airs this Friday night. I can remember, you know, when I think back to Rampage, and look, this is not just an AEW thing. I mean, even WWE, I remember when they brought back Main Event many years ago. This is probably going back to like 2012, I want. Somebody look it up. I'm pretty sure it was 2012 when Main Event was born. And I remember the very first episode of Main Event, they promoted what I believe may have been a WWE Championship match between CM Punk and Sheamus, right? You always get off to a hot start, and then your secondary show becomes secondary, and that's what happened with that show. And unfortunately for Rampage, that's what ended up happening with Rampage. It became secondary, it became third-dary, whatever word you want to use, it was at the bottom of the barrel every single week. And it was an opportunity for some people to get time on TV who otherwise were not, but it was a completely missable, unimportant show. But that very first episode, they had that great, they opened the show with it too. They had that great match with Kenny Omega and Christian Cage. Kenny Omega was the Impact World Champion and the AEW World Champion. And he defended the Impact World title against Christian. Christian beat him for the belt. He gave him a kill switch on a chair. And the place went fucking nuts when Christian won the belt that night. It was a great match. It was a great moment. That was the very first episode of Rampage. And to see where the show was at one time and what it has become and how just completely unimportant it has become over these past couple of years is sad. The reason the show is not going to be on television anymore is because nobody watches it. If people were watching Rampage in larger numbers, Rampage would not be canceled. Rampage is canceled because nobody was watching the show. Not enough people were watching the show. And so Warner Brothers Discovery didn't give a fuck about Rampage. It's about Dynamite and Collision. That's it. They don't care about Rampage. They don't care about Ring of Honor. If they cared about Ring of Honor, Ring of Honor would already have a TV deal. You go from Omega and Christian. On that first Rampage, the final episode now of Rampage, we have Chris Jericho, the Ring of Honor World Champion, is wrestling Anthony Bowens, Private Party, the AEW Tag Team Champions, who can't seem to buy a segment on Dynamite since they beat the Young Bucks, which is just bewildering to me. They'll be in action on the show. Thunder Rosa will take on Layla Gray. And Hook battles Nick Wayne. Rampage goes out with a whimper on Friday night. Now, let's talk about World's End. Because the very next night, AEW has a pay-per-view. They're in Orlando, Florida. Last year, they were in Nassau, right? They were in Nassau Coliseum, I believe. They were on Long Island for World's End a year ago. So I am planning on going live. I haven't for the last couple of AEW pay-per-views, but I am planning on going live at this point after the show on Saturday night. So I'll be live on YouTube for the full review, and that will be the final pay-per-view of the year, not the final stream of the year. Because we still have Raw on Monday night, which is live, and then we're going to be ringing in the new year together as I've been doing the last few years. We're having another New Year's Eve stream here on the channel, so clear your calendar. Hopefully you can join. I am surprised not to see Swerve or Lashley on this card. That is surprising to me. But as the card currently stands, we have 8 matches. And 8 is good. Especially for an AEW show. If they keep it at 8, I think that's a good number. That's a good number. It's not in the double digits. 8 is a good number. I think they should keep it there. Here's the card and my predictions as we go along. We have Konosuke Takeshita. You would never know this, by the way, if you watched this show tonight. Konosuke Takeshita defends the International Championship against Powerhouse Hobbs. Should be a very good match. I am not anticipating a title change. Takeshita is actually going into the Tokyo Dome. And there are some potential double title matches that he'll be a part of. I just don't see him losing the title before he goes to the Tokyo Dome. So I think Takeshita picks up the win there. We have Mercedes Moné defending the TBS championship against Chris Statlander. This is the rematch from Full Gear. These two ladies went out there and stole the show. They had an excellent match. So good, they're running it back for a second time. It is hard for me to envision Mercedes losing, because she also is heading to the Tokyo Dome for Wrestle Dynasty on January 5th. But she's not defending the TBS title. She's defending her New Japan Strong Women's title. So whether or not she retains here really doesn't have any direct bearing or relevance on that card. It's hard for me to vote against Mercedes, but this is the rematch here. And I just don't see what's gained by beating Chris Statlander twice. Unless Willow Nightingale has not forgiven her for betraying her, and she's going to cost Statlander the championship, if they're going to do some kind of ridiculous finish like that, you know, absent that, just having Mercedes go in there and beat Statlander two in a row is just a bad idea. It's a terrible idea. Statlander should win the title here. I'm picking her to win. I think Chris Statlander gets her TBS title back. Again, Mercedes can still roll on into the Tokyo Dome the following week, and she still has a title that she can defend. Has no bearing on that show. Chris Statlander needs to win this championship. We have the AEW Women's World Championship on the line. We have Mariah May defending her title. Oh, Camille. I forgot all about Camille. We still don't know who attacked Camille, but I see people saying Camille can cost Mercedes the title. She could. I just think she needs to lose, because beating Statlander twice would be damaging to Statlander in a completely unnecessary way. If the idea is to run this back and just beat her again, don't even do the match. So if it takes an assist from Camille to get the job done, then so be it. But I just think it would be a huge mistake to just send her in there to be beaten for a second time. But Mariah May defends the AEW Women's World title in a Tijuana street fight against Thunder Rosa. I like Thunder Rosa, but I like Mariah May too. And Mariah May is not losing this championship before Toni Storm gets her hands on her again. It's just not happening. So Mariah May will, in fact, retain her title. I guarantee it. Then we have the two semifinal matches here in the Continental Classic. And both these matches are tremendous matches on paper. We have Ricochet, I believe for the first time ever, at least in a singles match, going one-on-one with Kazuchika Okada. Two heels, although in this match I would think Okada would be the babyface by default, if nothing else. The fans, and it happened actually tonight during his match with Benjamin, where I think it was after he flipped everybody off, there was a bitch chant. Now the crowd is chanting bitch at Okada. You've got Ricochet in there, and the fans have been chanting bald at Ricochet. So I'm wondering if at some point in the match we get a bald bitch chant directed at Ricochet. I'd like to see that. I think that Okada is moving on here to the finals of this tournament. He is the current Continental Champion. He didn't win the tournament last year, but he beat Eddie Kingston and he took the title from him. I want to say it was in April. And he's been the champion ever since. He is the defending champion. He is going to the finals of this tournament. On the other side, we have Will Ospreay against Kyle Fletcher. Now, before I realized weeks ago that they had changed the rules of this fucking thing, I thought that the idea would be that they would build to Fletcher and Ospreay until I saw the blocks and they explained the rule changes, so that wasn't going to be possible. When this all started, I said, you know what I think the final should be and the outcome should be? I think they should build to a rematch between Ospreay and Fletcher should beat him again. You want to really go all in on this kid and really push him to the moon, let him beat Will Ospreay for a second time. Win the Continental Classic, and that way, not if, but when Will Ospreay wins the world title in 2025, months from now, you could always circle back around to this for a third match with Kyle Fletcher, who hopefully is still being pushed at that point, say, hey, I beat you twice, right? I should be up first. I should be first in line for a shot at the AEW world title. That's what I was kind of mapping out in my head. But they're not meeting in the finals. They're meeting in the semifinals. And as I look at this and I think of, I'm looking at the heels and the baby faces and how it all balances out. And I'm thinking that Will Ospreay is getting his win back over Kyle Fletcher in the semifinals. I think Okada and Ospreay is your final in the Continental Classic, which would be a hell of a fucking match. Even if Kyle Fletcher gets beat by Ospreay, there's no harm in him being beaten by one of the top, if not the top star in the entire company. And look at the run that he had already up to this point in this tournament. Him losing to Ospreay is not going to kill him. But I do think Ospreay is going to beat him and get his win back. We get Okada and Ospreay in the final. I think Kazuchika Okada is going to win. And I think he's going to retain his Continental title. That's what I think. And I think that after he does so, after he beats Will Ospreay and he retains his title and carries it into the new year, we hear Kenny Omega's music. And Kenny Omega, before he gets out, before he boards that plane and heads to the Tokyo Dome, because he's got his match with Gabe Kidd coming up on January 5th, he shows up, he walks out as a surprise, gets a big reaction, and we get a face-to-face stare down. A preview of what is to come in the near future with Omega and Okada. Because you know that match is coming, probably for the Continental title. I don't know if they're going to be able to hold off until July and do it all in. That's a long way. I mean, look, if they do a face-to-face confrontation on this show, they're not waiting until July to do the match. But I think if there's any plan to do that match soon, you have that face-off. Let Kenny come out there as a surprise. Let that first appearance back be on an AEW pay-per-view. Not at the Tokyo Dome. Let it be here. Let it be on an AEW show. You get that face-to-face between them right there. That's a match. This is one of the reasons that they even brought Okada in. I mean, you're going to bring him in anyway, but the only match on people's minds, or Tony Khan's mind probably, when he brought Okada in, was Omega and Okada. It has to happen. That's what I think is going to happen. Okada wins, bitch. We have MJF one-on-one with Adam Cole. This is a battle for the Dynamite Diamond Ring. And I don't see a need for the Dynamite Diamond Ring to be on the line. I'm sure the ring itself will factor into the match. It doesn't mean the ring has to be on the line. I think it's stupid. I think it's unnecessary, but it is what it is. MJF is wrestling Adam Cole. Adam Cole has friends in Matt Taven and Mike Bennett, who I don't trust. And I think that at least the two of them, I don't even know where Kyle O'Reilly may fit into all this. And we haven't seen Roddy since Full Gear. Maybe all four of them. There's going to be a betrayal. I think that at least Taven and Bennett are going to turn their backs on Adam Cole. It is going to lead to his downfall, and MJF is going to beat Adam Cole. And my sincere hope is that when he does, we move on. And I do want to see MJF and Swerve at some point next year mix it up and work together, because I think that could be a lot of fun and good for both guys. And then in the main event, Jon Moxley defends the AEW World Championship against Orange Cassidy, Switchblade Jay White, and Hangman Adam Page. I do not believe that Jon Moxley, for a second, is going to lose this title on this show. I can't speak to whether or not Christian Cage may show up at the end and cash in, or try to cash in his world title contract opportunity. That is possible. But as far as this match is concerned, I think Jon Moxley is going to win. He's going to retain his title. If he just wins and that's how they go off the air, that'd be pretty fucking lame. So what they may have in store as a show closing angle or a cliffhanger, I don't know. I hope they have something. I hope they have something good to really get people excited going into that January 1st show with the big simulcast on Max. They have to do something big at the end of this show. Last year, it was Samoa Joe winning the world championship and Adam Cole being revealed as the devil. That was the big angle at the end of the show last year. What will it be this year? I don't know. But I do know that Jon Moxley is going to retain his title. That is your World's End card. At least as it currently stands. Let's get into your super chats. Ho, 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 everybody. Merry Christmas. I hope you all had a wonderful holiday. I hope you got to hang out with friends or family, eat a lot of food, get a lot of gifts. I didn't get anything, but that's okay because I got you. You got me. And now, actually, I got your super chats, so we're going to get into those. But happy holiday to everybody watching right now. I love you all. Unless you're a dick to me, then you can go fuck yourself. But otherwise, I love you all. You all are awesome. Very festive tonight. We got a bunch of messages to get through. Oh, the polls. Yes, I forgot about the polls. There is a Twitter poll. I suppose I should go back and show you the poll. All right, let's take a look at the poll. I forgot the poll. What did you think of Dynamite? Christmas edition. 55.5% thumbs up. 44.5% thumbs down. So overall positive, but again, not everybody is a fan of the Continental Classic, and so you're going to get a mixed reaction to the show. This is not really a surprise. So there you go. There's your poll, everybody. Thank you, Ricky, thank you for reminding me. The story for Omega Okada is that Okada was part of the Elite when they beat him down and put him out. Yeah, I remember that too, but I mean, there's a lot of history there. That to say that that's the story is kind of simplifying it. There could be a lot more meat on that bone, I think. But it's not even so much about the story as much as it is about what that match would look like. And I just feel like the expectations are just impossible to live up to. They're older. We haven't seen New Japan Okada yet in AEW. We haven't. Kenny's coming off of a potentially life-altering injury, illness. He may never be the same again. We don't know what he's going to look like in the ring. So I think people, you know, need to temper their expectations. But still, I think you put those two in the ring together and you're going to end up with something great. Let's start with Base Beerus, God of Seduction, kicking us off earlier with the $2 super chat. Did Tony Khan ever get revenge on the Elite? No. Not really. Not directly. Joey Jojo Jr., Merry Christmas. Solomon's for Merry Christmas, Joey. Thank you very much. Jerome Eugenio. Merry Christmas to everyone. The new girl, Toni Storm, I think she has a future in this business. Yeah, you know, this new girl's pretty good. I need to see more of her, though. But I think she's got a decent future ahead of her, I think. Oz and Glorious, Merry Christmas Solo. You are my tribal chief. Thank you, Oz. I am indeed your tribal chief. I'm just part of a different tribe. Groovy Goose. Does the Hammerstein host proms and dance events? I can't say that it never did, but typically, no. They have concerts there. I know that. As far as other events, I don't know. I don't know. The Juliet. WWE and Netflix's latest had a big time spoiler about what does that even mean? WWE and Netflix's latest what? He said latest. I don't know what that means. Jericho against Bowens for the final Rampage. Also favorite Christmas wrestling memory. I don't have too many Christmas wrestling memories that really stand out to me. I wasn't watching World Class for Christmas Star Wars when they had that famous angle where the Freebirds closed the cage door on Carrie's head, and that set the territory on fire. For me, it's probably Austin's stunning Santa Claus, right? I always think back to that in 97. Derek J. Speaks, a badass pay-per-view hype video just posted on AEW's YouTube channel, set to Welcome to the Jungle. Great shit. Merry Christmas and Happy Hanukkah, Silva. Thank you, Derek. They had a great package for Full Gear as well. I forgot what song it was. Jeremy Rose with the $50 drop. My goodness. Merry Christmas. Thanks for all you do. Not a huge AEW fan, but the show being in Hammerstein was a better look than their normal dark, empty arenas. Also looking forward to the eventual Swerve beatdown of Ricochet. So nice, I had to read it twice. Jeremy, I agree, and thank you very much. I hope you had a very Merry Christmas. Sean D, was Prince Puma ever a heel? No, I don't believe he was. Brother Fluff Salisbury with the 12 Merry Christmas solo. My kids got me a photo op with Mike Tyson next month. Should I wear earmuffs in case he gets bitey? I would. Either that, what, you got Beats? Put your headphones on. That way you won't offend him. Chris Ludek with the 12. While I'm not into the Death Rider angle, I think the top group should be the Hurt Syndicate. They just need one more guy added. These smaller crowds and angles are giving AEW a good end to 2024. So far, so good with Hurt Syndicate, although, again, I'm very surprised that they are not featured on the World's End card. But yes, the smaller crowds are a necessary evil when you're not selling enough tickets. And I'm glad that they finally started doing it, because it's going to make the look, I think, and just the whole vibe of these shows so much better. It's just so much better than, you know, not even halfway filling some of these larger buildings. Some of these buildings that they've been booking are gigantic. They're 20,000 seat buildings in some cases. And they're not even pulling in half. So they had to. They had to downgrade. It was necessary. Jeremy says, Ricochet only gets over as a heel if he has Samantha by his side. LOL, I got the hottest chick around type stuff. No, that would get great heat. It's not the only way for him to work as a heel. It could still work even without her. But yes, if she was to come in, and she always wanted to be a performer, that's one of the reasons why she left WWE. Because they didn't have a role for her other than ring announcer, and she fucking hated ring announcing. She just did it because it was her foot in the door. She never wanted to be a ring announcer. She wants to be part of angles and stories and perform. I think it's only a matter of time before she comes in. And when she does, I think that would get him some incredible heat. I also feel like it could be a situation like Mark Marrow and Sable, where she becomes the focal point and gets more over than him. So you got to be careful in those situations. Phil DeTruth with the $10 super chat. Merry Christmas. As a hog security geek, I failed to protect you this past show from the dastardly Charles Mason. I missed it due to helping taking down the cage. I hope you don't deduct my pay. I have not docked your pay. I did dock the pay for some of the referees who were very late in coming out and helping me. And I've addressed that with them in private already. And I know it's Christmas time and all that, but I don't really give a shit. Because what happened was ridiculous. And the fact that I had to lay there for as long as I did before they came out to help me, I docked some of their pay. You don't have to worry about that. You're excused this one time, but just make sure it doesn't happen again. And Merry Christmas to you as well. Oz and Glorious, Merry Christmas to everyone except Daniel Garcia, Daddy Magic, Ricky Starks, CM Punk, Nick Khan, Triple H, Vince McMahon, and his lame wannabe... the MAGA Taker and his lame wannabe dentist brother. Much love, Solo. That's a long, naughty list that you have there. Well, I think we can all agree, fuck Vince McMahon. I hope he gets nothing for Christmas. I hope he gets a fucking subpoena for Christmas. Left underneath his door. Base Beer says, hyped for Penta's arrival in the Fed. Oh yes, Penta is coming to the Fed. Oz and Glorious, 43 months of channel membership. Acknowledge me by hitting like. Yes, we did pass 400 likes, by the way, so we are doing a Be the Booker segment. Stay tuned for that. Eminem with 25. What better way to spend Christmas than with you and the rest of the Solo family? With AEW now streaming on Max next week, do you think they have a chance to make it through 2025? Do they have a chance to make it? What does that mean? To make it through 2025? Dude, they just signed like a minimum 3-year media rights deal with an option for a fourth. Like they're good for a few years. So yeah, I think they're going to make it through 2025 just fine. Also, Naomi turns heel before or after the Royal Rumble? Before. Oz with another $2. Yes, 43 months of channel membership. That's very impressive. I don't think that's first place, but that's pretty high up on the list. Chris Ludek, my favorite Tony Schiavone call was when Lex Luger had a 2-day U.S. title reign in 1998 and said, despite it being 2 days, it was still a great one. Tony, he's so full of shit. He's just so full of shit. Oh, man. Surprised he didn't say it was the greatest U.S. title run in the history of our sport. Anthony Remy was at the show for Dynamite. It was cold outside, but had a blast. Second balcony. My first time in that building. Where did you used to sit when you went? I never sat in any of the balconies. I never had balcony seating. I always tried to get in the first 3 or 4 rows. So every time I went to Hammerstein, like specifically the Hammerstein, I was always in the first, 3 or 4 rows. And I tried to be... I think more often than not, I was probably, in the 3rd row. But, yeah, I didn't want to be in the back. And I didn't want to be all the way on top. I think a balcony seat would have been pretty cool to do at least once. But I always tried to get as close to the ring as I could possibly get. Which is dangerous with the way that guys do dives and stuff these days. You kind of put you in the danger zone there, but I always had fun. Every show I ever went to in that building, I always had fun. Anthony was at the show for Dynamite. It was cold out. Oh, I just read that one. Oz and Glorious, tag name, pulping up. Oh, me and Orange Cassidy? I think we could do better than that. Power Spying Games, buy or sell, cinema or aura? God. Oh. Begrudgingly, I'll go with aura. It's just a little less cringe-inducing than cinema. Retro KOH, Merry Christmas, everyone. I watched Top Gun today. Poor Maverick. His goose was cooked. Very nice. Very nice. Very funny. You watched Top Gun today. You should have been watching Die Hard. I think Paramount had an all-day Die Hard marathon. It's never Christmas until Hans Gruber has fallen off of Nakatomi Plaza. Then it's Christmas. Base Beerus, new emojis in 2025. I'm actually at the emoji limit right now, so I'd have to get rid of some, but I'm always open to new ideas if people have ideas. Emmett, Merry Christmas and Happy Hanukkah. Yes, again, Emmett came in with the $50, so I had to read it a second time. And Emmett, I am wishing you a very happy holiday and a very happy new year as well. I hope the new year is even better to you than it was in 2024. Base Beerus, Y2J is in New York City. We could possibly run into him. Oh boy. Oz and Glorious says, Christopher Daniels is supposed to be impartial. Charles Mason would like a word, Commissioner Solomonster. I'm very impartial. I had a job. I had a task that was assigned to me by somebody from above. I did my job. I continue to do my job. I've been the commissioner at this point for like 2 years. Do not imply that I am not impartial at my job. I take great offense to this. Power Spying Games. Christmas, Hanukkah, and Eid will probably be on the same day in 2033. Let's not forget about Kwanzaa, which usually follows afterwards. Well, that's why they call it the holiday season. There are a lot of holidays all bunched up around the same period of time. Hanukkah is actually very late this year. It usually does not start on Christmas, but for whatever reason, this year it did. Arabian Night, buy or sell, who WWE has dropped the ball on more? Swerve? Or I guess, who did WWE drop the ball on more? Swerve or Tony? I don't like saying more or less, because we'll never know. They're both super talented. Toni Storm, we're seeing how talented she is right now and how creative she is right now. Swerve Strickland, again, super talented guy, sky's the limit. Could have been a world champion for them, just like he was a world champion in AEW. You know, there was money to be made with both of them. So, I would say more so Swerve, if for no other reason, because they got rid of Swerve. Tony left herself. Tony literally, I mean, she left. She was supposed to be at a show, I think, one night and just left. She flew herself home. She paid to fly herself home. She was done. She wasn't let go. She wasn't fired. She made the decision. I'm done. With Swerve, it was different. They could have had him. They did have him. And they squandered him. That's worse. So I'll say Swerve, but two people who could have made that company money and they could have done a lot with. And unfortunately for them, they didn't. And their loss is Tony Khan's gain. Oz and Glorious, Fletcher is everything Tony Khan wishes Garcia would be. Yeah. I don't know that I disagree with that. Dan Richards, 19 months of channel membership. Happy Chrismica, a term I just learned of the other day. Happy holidays to the solo universe, hopeful for an even better 2025. I don't know if it's spelled that way, but yes, that's a term that I heard some time ago. Jeremy Rose, how does it benefit a character like the Beast to go zero in the Continental Classic? You can't convince me Tony Khan knows what he's doing. Again, he was in there because in that group, there had to be at least one person who lost. Because he's not... I don't have the group in front. Hey, let me see if I can put it up again. All right, so the group that he was in had Kyle Fletcher, Kazuchika Okada, Mark Briscoe, Daniel Garcia, Shelton Benjamin, and the Beast Mortos. If Mark Briscoe can pick up 9 points, then the Beast Mortos could pick up at least 3. So, yeah, going zero is pretty fucking terrible. But that was his role in the group. Just like Commander, his role in the group in replacing Juice Robinson was to be a loser and eat losses and play spoiler at the end of the tournament. That's what he did. Mortos didn't have the chance to play spoiler because look at all the names that were in there with him. Benjamin, Okada, Fletcher, right? These are some of the stars of the entire tournament. But no, it doesn't do him any good. To answer your question, you're right. Goes out there and has good matches. So what? He has 0 points. It's a fucking loser. You're not wrong. Power Spying Games, top 5 or 10 Christmas songs. I don't know about 5. I don't like ranking them by 5 or 10. I'll give you a bunch, though. Feliz Navidad is a favorite of mine. I always like Feliz Navidad. That's a great one. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Rocking Around the Christmas Tree. Gosh, what else? A few other ones. Those are the main ones. Those are probably the ones you would hear about the most. I'd say those are my favorites. Devin from New Jersey, buy or sell Hammerstein or Grand Ballroom? Hammerstein. Base Beerus, those zero promos in WWE are for more. Oh, that's hilarious. Are for Mortos. We got a promo on Raw last week that had a zero. It had a promo with the zero in it. And you know what? You may be right. I think the zero might have been for the number of points that the Beast Mortos got in the Continental Classic. I love it. Oh, that's fantastic. The Beast Mortos. What a swerve that would be. Maybe that's why Tony Khan is losing the Beast Mortos to WWE. And so he jobbed him out on the way out. He gave him 0 points in the Continental Classic. Now it all makes sense. Now we know what the zero is for. The Juliet. Netflix / WWE's latest ad. The 30-second spot had Becky Lynch in it. Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, and Happy Kwanzaa to all. You know, I told you guys weeks ago, Becky Lynch was going to be, absolutely going to be on that January 6th show. I'd be shocked if she's not. Plus Ultra Adrian with the $10. Merry Christmas to you solo and your family this year. I hope you and everybody else got what they wanted for Christmas. Well, I got myself a little something and probably won't get it for another week or two, but thank you, sir. I hope you had a very Merry Christmas as well. Justin G, is the ballroom handicap accessible? Asking for me. Ah, man, I don't know. The ballroom's up on the 8th floor of the Manhattan Center, so I don't know. I honestly don't know if it is. I would be inclined to say no. But it's possible they have some other entrance up there. Maybe it is. Hammerstein, I'm sure is, but the ballroom, I don't know. I don't have a good answer for you. Ed Swoggle, channel member for 23 months. Merry Christmas and Happy Hanukkah to you as well. Thank you, sir. And he says, watched Die Hard today on Disney Plus. Merry Christmas, Solo. Well, you did it the right way. That's how it's supposed to be done. And Navy 4181, did you take the bait when Heenan acted like a babyface and then spoiled it for the kids when he was dressed up as Santa in 89? I did not take the bait. Although it was kind of cool. There was a Madison Square Garden show in like 90 or 91. Or maybe it was like 91 or 92. And it might have only been the one night, but they were teasing something with Heenan and Fuji. And Heenan was being cheered. It was like the only time I can remember Bobby Heenan even remotely being positioned like a babyface in WWE. And I don't think they ever followed up on it or did anything with it. And they shouldn't have. I mean, because he wasn't, at that point, he was either managing very little or wasn't really managing at all, and he's just such a natural heel. But no, as far as that, I didn't take the bait. I was young, but I was smart. I was hip to their tricks. Yeah, Die Hard on Disney Plus. That just sounds wrong. That just sounds wrong. Let's see here. Just G Square. They showed a handicapped person in the front row. Yeah, but again, if you're talking about Dynamite, that was Hammerstein, not the ballroom. Ballroom is upstairs on the 8th floor. Thank you guys for the super chats. Again, we passed the goal tonight. So I thank you for that. And with that being said, here on this Christmas night.
Ho, ho, ho!
Ho, 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 indeed. Let us go ahead and be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time.
Hey, did somebody say Bobby Heenan is Santa Claus? Would you look at that? Talk about timing of that super chat. Look at who we have here on screen for Be the Booker. Look at the way that worked out. Santa Heenan and Gorilla Monsoon. On primetime wrestling. That's classic shit right there. Okay. Be the Booker. Christmas edition. Now, certainly, we got to be in the Christmas spirit here. We have to end up with just an amazing card tonight. Right? We have to. We have to have the dream card. We begin with the Rhodes Boys. Cody Rhodes and Goldust, the former Raw Tag Team Champions. And two men who still to this day have one of the best matches in AEW history. Cody against Dustin. Cody and Dustin are going to take on Harlem Heat. What a fucking match. That'd be great. The Rhodes against Harlem Heat. That's a tag team match right there. That's great. I like that. All right, we got to book a women's match now. That is our task. Round and around and around it goes, and we will stop the wheel on Julia. Look how cool. Look how cool this woman looks. What a badass. Got the red fur. I will say, Julia with her hairstyles in Stardom, much better than what she's had here in NXT so far. I kind of wish and hope that she'll change it up a little bit, maybe go back to some of these hairstyles. But either way, love Julia. Let's see. We got to pick an opponent for her now. It's going to be Julia taking on Zoe Stark. I think that would be a fine wrestling match. Zoe is really not over. People don't really seem to react when she's out there, but it's not because she's a bad wrestler. She's just not over. But against Julia, I think the two of them, like if Julia was still wrestling in Japan, and I feel like if let's say WWE sent Zoe Stark over for a match and wrestled Julia, like they'd tear it up. Maybe one day in WWE they'll get that chance. I hope she doesn't botch her finish again. Yeah, that was rough. That Z360 the other night was rough. All right. Comes down to this, guys. Oh, boy. We begin with The Miz. Is this how we are going to end our main event on Christmas night? with The Miz? Is this what we're doing? The Miz is going to take on Stone Cold Steve Austin. Well, at least we get to see Austin open up a can of whoop-ass. Certainly can't give a buzzer to Stone Cold Steve Austin in the main event. That, my friends, is a Christmas sweep. That's the way I was hoping it would work out. We got ourselves a sweep on Christmas. Oh, how sweep it is. Yes, indeed. Be calm, see clearly. Happy holidays. I'm still waiting for you to wrestle Stevie Richards, who I really enjoy. Reminds me of you a lot. Why would I wrestle Stevie Richards? I don't want to wrestle Stevie. I'd love to have a conversation with Stevie. Stevie seems like a nice guy. I don't need to wrestle him. Did you guys see what happened to me on Friday? You're already trying to put me back in the ring. I'm still recovering from what happened last week. You're booking me for a match here. At least let me heal up first. We got a Christmas miracle at the end. Be calm, see clearly. The Stone Cold versus Miz promos would be fun. Eh. I don't know about that. When I think of people on that current roster who Austin could probably mix it up with on the mic and really have some fun with, you know, I think of CM Punk. I think of, I was going to say Owens, but I still say Kevin Owens because we never got the back and forth too much. Austin sent in a tape promo. You know, I'm talking like if he was there and we could get like the dueling promos and get a proper program with him and Owens. Like, that would have been great. CM Punk obviously is at the top of the list. Drew McIntyre, though. Like, this version of Drew McIntyre on the stick with Steve Austin going back and forth with Stone Cold? Fucking great. I think that would be tremendous. Thank you for hanging out with me here on Christmas night. I will see you back here in 48 hours after SmackDown. Check out the other content on the channel, including my predictions for wrestling in 2025. That video is now up as well. Peace and love. See you guys back here on Friday night for the stream. Until then.